It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up later, Minnesota Vikings star Adrian Peterson has come under fire this week for alleged child abuse. We'll take a look at the state of corporal punishment in America.
First, the rise of SWAT teams in the United States. Created in the 1960s to deal with unique and dangerous situations, SWAT teams have turned into a force increasingly used in more routine policing around the country.
And with the recent events in Ferguson, Missouri, there are new questions being asked about the appropriate role of these teams. But just how did we get here?
Joining us now is Olivia Katranjian. She's a reporter at Retro Report, which looks to the past to help tell stories of the present. Olivia, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, take us back first to the 1960s when these SWAT teams were created. What purpose were they created for?
Well, in 1965, riots in the Watts section of Los Angeles left 34 people dead, and 42 square miles of this neighborhood were just destroyed. I interviewed a former member of the LAPD who said, "We had never seen anything like it. Watts was just burning to the ground." And so the LAPD was caught off guard. They were being shot at. They didn't know how to control the riots. And so they called in the National Guard. And it took over 14,000 National Guardsmen to quell the riots. And so they realized they needed a specialized team to deal with dangerous events like this violent unrest, but also hostage takings and sniper shootings. And so they decided to form a SWAT team.
And those SWAT teams, as you point out in the Retro Report, were first used for things like shootouts with members of the Black Panther Party or the Symbionese Liberation Army. Were these viewed as successful operations for the first SWAT teams?
They were. The shootout with the Black Panthers was sort of the LAPD SWAT team's debut. And after 4.5 hours, the police were seen as sort of the winners in that shootout. And their reputation was really cemented, though, on a national level after the shootout with the Symbionese Liberation Army 5 years later in 1974. The SLA had kidnapped heiress Patty Hearst, and they had committed several crimes in Northern California, and finally the LAPD SWAT team was able to apprehend them after this long shootout in downtown L.A. And so those were seen as successes, and soon after the SWAT TV show came out, as did a SWAT video game and a board game, and so SWAT really became part of the pop culture.
And it became part of police culture. How quickly did SWAT teams start spreading once people saw this example?
Well, law enforcement agencies around the country started to form their own SWAT teams in the late 60s and early 70s. And today they've spread not just to major cities, but to smaller cities as well. In 1983, roughly 1 in 10 small cities had a SWAT team, and now 8 in 10 have SWAT teams.
And their mission has changed, first in the war on drugs.
Yes. When Reagan amped up the drug war, that rhetoric, that war rhetoric, really filtered down into police forces. And SWAT teams morphed into the soldiers in that war. And as criminologist Peter Kraska said in our piece, they started fighting the drug war inside people's homes. So today, SWAT teams are deployed about 160 times every day, and 80% of those deployments are to search for drugs. And that's a complete reversal of their role.
And with more SWAT teams out there conducting house raids, like you're talking about, there are chances of things going wrong. Can you tell the story of what happened to a Wisconsin family while they were out of the state in one of these raids?
Yes. Their home in Janesville, Wisconsin, had burned down. And so they were staying with their family members in Georgia. And I interviewed the mother whose toddler was hit by a stun grenade when a SWAT team broke down their door at 3 o'clock in the morning. The toddler's face and chest were badly burned because the stun grenade landed in his crib. Their nephew had allegedly sold drugs to an undercover agent from the home earlier that day, but the police, he wasn't there, and the police were able to peacefully apprehend him at another location after knocking and announcing themselves.
And you also quote an interview in this piece, a mayor who was raided mistakenly by a SWAT team.
Yes, I interviewed a mayor in Maryland whose two dogs were shot and killed in a botched SWAT raid. He was the victim of a drug scheme in which a drug dealer was sending packages to unsuspecting victims. The county SWAT team had intercepted one of those packages that was addressed to his wife, and they actually delivered it to him undercover. when the mayor brought it inside, not knowing that the box contained 32 pounds of marijuana, the SWAT team broke down his door and immediately shot his two dogs, handcuffed him and his mother-in-law, and they were handcuffed, you know, up for 2 hours before the SWAT team realized, you know, we've made a mistake.
I want to play a short clip, a couple blasts from the past in the news world in this retro report.
In a society such as ours, dedicated to individual rights, what are some of the dangers and ramifications of such elite police units?
Are the policemen acting too much like soldiers?
So, Dan Rather, 1986, Peter Jennings, 14 years later in 2000, here we are talking about this 14 years later. Do concerns of public apprehension about these special weapons and tactics teams kind of come and go in waves over the years?
They do come and go in waves, but I think it really took the police response to the events in Ferguson, Missouri, recently to start a national dialogue that we're seeing today, and then to, create the need for a Senate hearing on police militarization. And so that happened last week. The Senate looked at the 1033 program, which allows the transfer of military equipment to local police departments. In Wisconsin alone, the Pentagon, through that program, has given Wisconsin police agencies more than $28 million in surplus military equipment just in the last decade. And so we're sort of reviewing this now and seeing, do we need that equipment? Is it necessary? And I do think SWAT teams are definitely a necessary part of law enforcement. We saw that at the school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, and after the bombing at the Boston Marathon. We need specialized teams for certain situations, but it took the police response to protests in Ferguson to make us look back and say, how did we get here? You know, is this a necessary part of our law enforcement in all the ways that it's being used today?
Yeah, the precipitating incident you talked about, the Watts riots in the mid-60s, were, you know, square miles with fires, people shooting at police and fire rescue personnel. So that you could kind of see why that might motivate the creation of SWAT teams. The Ferguson protests looked very different than that.
Yes. Since the Watts riots and the creation of the LAPD SWAT team, police do have a lot more equipment, and they now have body armor. And a lot of that is because police have been in situations where they're in danger, and they've needed body armor. And so a lot of that is necessary. But do we need to respond to protesters with, you know, body armor, tanks, guns? That's the question today.
Is there, you quote some experts on the subject who are questioning the militarization of police and maybe the mission creep of SWAT teams. Do you get the impression that police departments are starting to rethink where they draw the line between ordinary policing and this almost paramilitary approach?
Well, you know, because of these several cases of botched SWAT raids, several police departments have been sued, and they've gotten into very expensive lawsuits, and so they have sort of questioned the necessity of their SWAT teams. And I think after the riots in Ferguson, Missouri, people have been questioning their SWAT teams, and some actually have given equipment back.
Olivia, thank you so much for joining us today. Very interesting story you've told.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Olivia Katranjian. She's a reporter at Retro Report. She joined us to talk about the origins and the rise of SWAT teams here in the United States.